This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
So the project is looking at activism and sexuality both 30 years ago and today. And it's particularly looking at queer, female-bodied and female-identified activism and sexuality. And the project is taking the form of doing a lot of different kinds of research, so research in Legans, in the archives, but also what I'm calling embodied research, so drawing people, talking with people, doing collaborative drawings, and everything will go into the light boxes on Courtney Place at the end.
And describe the light boxes, what are they?
So the light boxes are a public art project by Wellington City Council. So they're 8 large-scale light boxes on Courtney Place, and they're kind of like billboards, I guess. Like, they're on the street. They sort of echo kind of commercial space, but they're for art.
And how do you get to kind of exhibit in those boxes?
So you write a proposal. So I proposed this project well over a year ago, about a year and a half ago. And like all proposals, you have to describe what you think you're going to do. And then you start doing the project and it blossoms and grows and becomes what it actually is going to be. Yep. And they're up for, they'll be up for 3 or 4 months, I think. So, yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I'm really excited about them is that it is such a public space, and it's an open space. People, anyone walking on the street can see them. You don't have to go into a gallery or, yeah.
So you're saying that you're kind of focusing in on female activism and female bodied activism.
Mm.
Why that in particular?
Well, one of the things, there's a few strands, but I'm really interested in how other groups and identities protested and worked really hard and took a lot of risks for homosexual law reform and for the rights to sexually express themselves of gay men, and of trans women at that time, and how that process of coming together over sexual rights, over human rights, but how our sexual rights, like I've said to a number of people, there isn't a law about that, about my sex or my sexuality, because there doesn't need to be, because we have the patriarchy and it teaches us to hate our bodies and be quiet and silent and good, and it teaches my butch lovers to feel like they're ugly and they're unacceptable and on and on and on and on. So it's like much more complicated, much more difficult to kind of put your finger on and difficult to see. Whereas I think, and I mean, a lot of what I've been reading in the archives and hearing from people is that the law was such a galvanizing force because it was so clear and it was so clearly wrong. That's what I'm interested in kind of looking at. And I feel like my journey of coming out, or coming out, I think of it as many different things over the years, has been a battle against silence. Because my sexuality has been silenced in so many ways. So this is about, working against that. Working against that silencing, yeah.
Can you give me some examples of how your sexuality has been silenced?
Mm. So, for example, like when I was growing up, like I have a lot of queer people in my family and my whakapapa, and I had queer people around me, but I never thought I could possibly be a lesbian because I felt like a drag queen. So when I finally came out when I was around 27, it was like a quite typical, I think, femme experience of thinking, I have to cut my hair off, I have to get rid of my clothes that have sequins on, because I have to be recognisably lesbian, I have to be recognisably queer, and that's not true. So that's part of the silencing for me, is that I didn't see myself anywhere reflected. And so I tried to have sex with men and keep making that work, because it was like, I don't understand what I am. I don't know what I am. And I think I think we can't be what we can't see. And that's part of queer culture, isn't it? Making ourselves visible in all of our diversity. Yeah. But also when I was, growing up, there was very, very little dialogue about actual sex. So, I mean, the first time I had sex with a man, I just remember it so clearly and feeling absolutely nothing and thinking that must be normal. Or like all of these narratives about kind of female sexuality being like being passive and being about, you know, it's not necessarily about you, and all of that stuff was quite, quite difficult to work against, and I didn't have any tools to work against it with. And I really hope that things are different now, for younger people. But just the dialogue and conversations around sex weren't there for me. Yeah.
So were you around during homosexual law reform?
I was, I grew up in the UK, so I came to New Zealand when I was 20, so I would have been 9 when homosexual law reform went through here, but I would have been, in the UK.
And in the UK, what was the kind of situation there in terms of kind of homosexuality and the legality of it?
I don't know when the law changed, but I know that it was illegal in the 70s, and that my mother had a lecturer at her university who she adored, and he was a gay guy, and he was doing cottaging and he was arrested, and so there was I remember hearing those stories when I was really young, and kind of being told about that injustice and strangeness, and they were presented to me as that lecturer and his partner as just like us, you know, very much that sort of narrative where they lived in a cottage with a beautiful gate with roses over the, you know, those were the kind of stories that she told. Mm.
So in your research so far, what have you found in terms of the kind of the non-gay men that were involved in law reform? What are the things that you've discovered?
There's a lot of lesbian stuff in the archives, and one of the things which is really interesting is about solidarity and working together, and there's some really interesting narratives around sexism and lesbians having discussions. There's this fantastic publication called Dyke News, and their philosophy was to, if it was lesbian, they published it. So it's a really amazing kind of snapshot of lots and lots and lots of different opinions. So I think in there, there's conversations with women talking about why are we doing this, and talking about, you know, female people are brought up to help other people and serve other people, and we have to be careful that we have energy left over for ourselves. And there's also a lot of really amazing, passionate writing about why we need to be doing this protesting. People writing about their about their own experiences of homophobia, coming out because of the bill, and just the bravery around that. And in terms of the solidarity, also like from gay men writing about that and saying, you know, if we want, we need the women, we need lesbians, we need bisexuals, we need this support. And if we're going to gain that support, we have to look at our own sexism, and we have to look at there's this one incredible piece of writing where a guy just starts by saying, today I'm ashamed to be a man, and this is why, you know. And he says, the lesbians don't need us, they've proved that they're perfectly fine without us, but we would be lost without them. So there were these sort of consciousness raising groups around sexism, and it's like the project is almost becoming more about the cracks in our communities and how we get to each other across those cracks. And I think that was a big part of it 30 years ago, and it's a big part of our communities now, because we're all so different and sexuality is so personal.
And are you looking at material earlier than, say, 85, 86? Because, I mean, there was a lot of activism happening before that.
Mm.
So are you going further back, or are you just concentrating on that kind of peak time of 85, 86?
I'm looking at the 70s and at the 80s and how many things were connected, and work around the treaty, and it's all connected. And I think in one of the interviews that's on Pride NZ with Elizabeth Kerikeri, and she was talking about being part of the Black Women's Movement and wanting to support, sort of mobilize each group to support what other groups were doing, and just help people by doing whatever they needed. So she, rather than kind of telling other people what they need, just listening and mobilizing the energy and resources you already have to provide that. Yeah.
Aside from the Lesbian and Gay Archives of New Zealand, are there other kind of pathways or avenues that you're getting that kind of historic kind of angle from?
Yeah, definitely. So I've always found that research is surprisingly organic in how it sort of, it's like you dive into the ocean and suddenly it's all around you, and people turn up and you think, this is the perfect person to talk to. And what I'm trying to do is find the narratives that are not sort of the narratives that we've heard before. And I'm not a historian and I'm not a journalist, and I'm an artist and a writer. And my friend Hini Moana said to me, who's mentoring me through this project, the writing part of it, and she said, artists look for connections. That's what we do. So I'm talking to, all sorts of people in terms of interviewing people. So I interviewed, I did an interview recently about biphobia around that time, so I'm interviewing people, and that's quite an organic process. I'm just sort of trying to find the people that it feels right to interview, and interview people who identify in different ways, and get kind of a snapshot in that way. And then there's a range of other things that I'm doing. So I'm kind of gathering a lot of stuff, I guess, just online about protests at the moment. Like, there's so much queer activism happening right now. And I've just had, I found a video of the booing offstage of John Key, on good old Facebook. And it's just such a stunning thing that happened. And I love thinking about how I think that's the last place that he would have expected that to happen, because of those ideas about queer culture being sort of, you know, being silly or able to be commodified or entertaining. And there was a stunning trans woman at the front protesting, and I thought that is the image that I want to draw, which is really unusual for me. So I've tracked her down through Facebook and talking about, can I draw you as part of this project? So it's things like that which just kind of come up. I'm also doing, during Pride Week, I'm doing a project called Drawing It Out, where I'm inviting people to come and be drawn in the studio, and I'm calling it Fully Consensual Life Drawing. So I will draw whatever you offer me, whatever part of your body you offer me, or it could be your ear, it could be your back, but something which connects to your sexuality. So that feels really amazing, and a kind of an intimacy as well, between me and the people who are drawn. So yeah, so there's that kind of research. I'm running a series of hui called Let's Talk About Sex, where we will talk and share and work out, like, the most common question that I've been asked by straight people about my sexuality is something like, well, what do you do anyway? And it's like, wow, one, it's none of your business. And two, that sums up so many myths around our sexuality. It's like, what, you know, like, it doesn't exist. So those who we are about, working out, well, it does exist, and let's kind of speak it out together into the world. Yeah, so those are some of the things I'm doing. There's other things.
How do you navigate those kind of intensely personal emotions or feelings or stories, and then kind of navigate it into like a public art work? How does that work?
So consent is really, really important to me. So whatever people tell me or share with me or show me, I will work with, and then I will show what I've made to them, and they have absolute right to say, yes, that's fine to go into this context, or no, it's not. And if they say no, it's not, I'm going to literally cut it physically out of the artwork, because the artwork itself is, everything's going to be assemblage. So one of my main values in my art making and my life is that many things are true at once, and conflicting things can be true at once. So this will be a presentation of many truths all together. So the artworks are very layered. So there may be drawings of bodies, and then there may be text, and so and I think I really like that idea of cutting things out if they need to be cut out, and leaving that as obvious, because I think that's a really important part of our survival and our culture, is that sometimes we need to retreat from the public world and just be together, and we can share things together that we don't want to share out in straight society. Yeah.
Do you have any kind of like, are there any constraints about what you can and can't show in like in a very public street scene?
I think I have to, everything that I make has to be approved by the public art panel. But I don't have many concerns about them. They're all artists, and I think it will be fine, but it's more, what people want to feed through that process and onto the street. I think that's part of the project, is like with drawing it out. I thought, you know, it may be that no one wants to come and be drawn, and then I will show a blank piece of paper, because that's fine. So it's kind of, all of the methods are quite experimental, and they're also like they're like offers. I feel like I keep making these offers out into the world and sort of saying, what about this? And seeing if it strikes a chord for people, you know, and it's okay if it doesn't. Because this process is, like, I've talked about this project from the beginning as being like looking for my queer whakapapa of activism and of sexuality. So looking for that grounding, that net, those layers of people who've come before me and people who are coming after me to kind of position myself. And I think that process is always really challenging. It throws up all sorts of things. You find things that you don't want to look at and things that are really comforting, and it's kind of all in that same process. So what I want to present is like, this is what I found, and it's a big tangle and I don't have any of the answers, but it's beautiful as well, and it's powerful and it's complicated. And so the artwork and the writing will reflect that complication. So the writing pieces will be bits from the archives, bits of me writing about the process, things that I've been allowed to quote that other people have said, and weaving it all together into this sort of very layered story. Yeah.
And the light boxes, is there going to be a tie between the boxes, or are they kind of going to be...
Well, there's 8 of them, and they have 2 sides, so there's 16 panels. So that's one of the things I have to sort of work out through the process is, in terms of it being readable, should it be sort of alternating, you know, 30 years ago and today or whatever it is. So that'll be kind of worked out as I go. But one of the things that's really great about the light boxes is that a lot of people walk past them regularly. I know with works that I've really engaged with, I've sort of stopped, you know, more than once, and you'll notice different things about them And because the artworks and the writing will be photographed and scanned, for me it's an exciting project because they can be quite temporary sort of pieces. So they can be hanging together by threads and because they're just photographed. So that's sort of, I think, quite an important part of the materiality of the project is that, our stories are always changing, you know, and we take them apart and we put them together again in a different way. And that's actually what history is like. It's not fixed. It's all these different perspectives.
You touched on briefly activism now in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Mm.
Are you able to paint a picture of some of the kind of activities that you've come across?
Yep. So I've been following No Pride in Prisons, and they've been pretty active lately, and I met with them up in Auckland, and they, they're really brave and interesting, and we're talking about putting how activism is literally putting our bodies in the way of what we are protesting against. And so they recently stopped the Pride Parade. Broke through barriers and stopped the Pride Parade, and it had to be rerouted. And that's a really, even just that is such a fascinating situation, because some people feel they ruined the parade, and, you know, and other people feel, you know, what a great demonstration. And so there's a lot of conversation about kind of what Pride is all about. You know, is it about celebrating and looking good and having fun, and being celebrating, being allowed to be on the street and being okay, and we've got marriage equality and aren't we doing well? And then the other argument, I guess, which is about pride only means anything if it's for everyone and if everyone is carried with us, and that there are a lot of people who have not been carried with us and whose rights are still in such a sorry state as they were 30 years ago. And so let's bring that to the forefront and make that part of those parades. So it's a very interesting moment. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the dildo throwing at Stephen Joyce and the booing John Key off stage, and one thing that has really struck me is how particularly young queer people identify everything as being connected. So they don't just talk about liberation of queer peoples, they talk about socialism, and they talk about racism, and they talk about... So it's the same as what Elizabeth Kittikitty was talking about, that no one's free until everyone's free. Yeah.
Do you allow yourself to have an opinion on this, or is the artwork kind of a neutral and you're just presenting different aspects? I mean, does it have an opinion?
I think that... Yeah, I would struggle to ever call my artwork neutral. Someone asked me recently, what are your art proposals like? And I said they are hot and passionate and tangled and well researched, and that's what they're like, and they just are what they are. And so I think this project is like that, but at the same time it is open. I think that one of my gifts as an artist is being able to provide space for truths that are almost opposite to each other. And people have very passionate views about each other and identities and all sorts of things. And what's important to me is that nobody is squashed. I don't want to be squashed. But that means that I also have to listen to some things that I might find difficult too. That's my dog.
And you've mentioned the word solidarity a number of times, and I guess I wonder, I mean, do you see, the rainbow communities in Aotearoa? Is there solidarity now, do you think?
I think there's a mixture. I think there's and I think it comes down to privilege to a large degree. I think that some people, of course, are doing better than others in the world, and it's the ones of us who are more able to pass or to be part of the world that we've got now. And what I'm interested in is making new worlds. I'm not interested in trying to fit into a world that already exists. And when I was a child, I grew up with Glastonbury Festival and many festivals that grew from nothing. And so that's kind of part of my worldview, is that we actually create the world. We don't have to kind of be obedient to how we're told things have to be. But I think the solidarity comes from being able to listen to each other, but which is a lovely, you know, thing to think and say. But part of that is can be really, really uncomfortable, because always acknowledging your own privilege is uncomfortable and sad, but that's what we have to keep. That's what we have to keep doing. So, I mean, I'm running a fundraising campaign through Boosted, and Hini Moana again recently said to me, she was in a writers' festival in Minsk, and she said, "I heard this local saying, which was the cracks in the country run through the artist," And this project is very much like that. And the fundraising campaign is very much like that. So the cracks in our community are being shown to me through this process. So, for example, only two gay men have donated to that campaign. Three. One more yesterday. And I asked some really close friends why they thought that was and, like, what am I doing wrong? And they said, it doesn't have anything to do with us. And, yeah, it was like, oh, okay. I have to tell that story more clearly because this project is in part the stories of people who supported homosexual law reform to go through. And they worked really, really hard and they took a lot of risks. And it's kind of, I find that frightening and sad that, yeah, female stories sort of get lost in that history because we're not written into history enough. So yeah, those are the kind of cracks that I'm seeing, and also cracks where it's like for me, defining my audience for this project and the kaupapa of this project took months of working out. And at first I wanted it to just be a lesbian project. That's an identity that's really important to me, and it's how a lot of women identified at that time, and they may not identify that way now. But when I went into the archives, the first day that I spent in the archives reading lesbian feminist writing about who was allowed in and who wasn't, and that bisexuals weren't allowed in, and if you'd ever had sex with a man, you weren't allowed in, and if you were femme or if you were butch, you weren't allowed in. And I was so shocked. I thought, I can't do this project. You know, it felt like it was so hateful. And I guess that's part of this fuck-a-papa. Like, you find things that you think, I don't want to find that. I don't want to look at that. But that is part of where we've come from. And so at that point, I started thinking about, yeah, what I could stand by and what I could stand for. And I thought, I can't be a part of that narrative, and I can't continue that narrative, and that will mean that some lesbians will not come to this, and they will not be a part of this, and that's a real shame, but it has to be okay. And I think that their voices are in this through in this through the archives as well, which is cool. But yeah, there's a lot of cracks. Yeah.
So on a personal level, as an artist dealing with all these things, and especially the kind of some of the hateful things and some of the destructive energies around these issues, I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's quite hard work, and I have been doing things like reading rom-coms at night. Like, I'm like, you just have to read something really, really frivolous, and, you know, go and jump in the ocean. And but also something I've been trying to remember and practice recently is that I it's like so much wisdom that I need is coming through the archives and coming through my ancestors. So there was a bit where someone wrote, our sense of humour is our best weapon. And I thought, yes. And it's also our best defence. And so for me, I've been in my art practice, sort of, I think of it as like my little girl, where she's like, I just want to play with glitter. I don't care about all this stuff. I just want, and it's like, yes, go with that. And I think that is such a massive part of queer culture, and watching, you know, footage of of pride parades, and it just, it was like it struck me all over again how radical and how brave it is to be so expressive of ourselves and of our identities and of play and of fun and of seriousness. So it's kind of, yeah, just trying to keep that, yeah, keep that balance. Yeah. Is good.
And you've mentioned Hine Moana Baker a couple of times, and it must just be so special to have her on your shoulder, kind of just watching over you.
She is. Yeah. She's in Berlin at the moment, but we've known each other for many, many years. And so she's an amazing mentor through the project, and also when I come to pulling together the writing as well. And I've got a really amazing team of people working with me and collaborating with me on this project. So I have a intern through Massey, Nathaniel Gordon Stables, and he's really wonderful. I have a queer youth facilitator, Sasha Hartman Hughes, and Cassie Hartendorp's been working with me in a mentoring capacity as well. Tash Hellas Dottier is going to be photographing and videoing, and of course my partner Crete has been amazing at making boosted videos and helping me edit things, and being a real cheerleader and an encourager as well. So I think it's a really important part of this project, that collaborative sort of process and different voices and perspectives and identities that are feeding in to the whole form of the project and the stories that it's telling. So that's something that I want to do after the light boxes open, but while they're still up, like probably in October or November, is run a big hui where we can present all of this research, and maybe people who I've interviewed want to speak, or people I've collaborated with can show, you know, their work separately, talk about the process, and I think that will be a really amazing time to really open some of this conversation up. Yeah.